Group meeting, Sunday, 9th December, 1984. All those who are concerned, seriously concerned, with living the religious life, whether they know it or not, are a light to the world. You may wonder what I mean by that. We have to bear in mind that in this tremendous evolutionary process which brought human beings into the world, nature was concerned with bringing the body to maturity. Our present bodies as they are started about 40 or 45,000 years ago, anatomically. Now, the structure always goes together with function. The task of bringing the psyche to maturity is our own personal, individual task. Nature doesn't do anything in that connection. She supplies the vehicle, the body as such, but she supplies vehicles which are rather different in their capacities as such. The psyche actually is rooted in the material body, the brain, nervous system, the ductus glands, the bloodstream, and so forth. They constitute the physical root of the psyche. And the psyche in each and every one of us is especially our own psyche. It is not something universal. But mind, that archetypal form in which the primordial creative energy functions, it's one of the archetypal forms. Mind, in contact with matter, with the body, gives rise to psyche. The brain is the concretest expression of mind as such. Now, those who live the religious life are contributing towards bringing consciousness to its fulfillment, its culmination. There is an evolution of consciousness which only quite recently is beginning to interest psychologists and others in the Western world. In the East, they have always known about the evolution of consciousness. And we may ask, to what does this consciousness evolve? To what state? We, as we are conscious of everything in terms of separateness and isolativeness. We are conscious only in terms of the finite and the temporal, and therefore the mortal. Our context of functioning is finitude, temporality, and mortality. But the evolution of consciousness culminates in a holistic consciousness which is all-embracing, all-inclusive. That does not mean that the brain is the perfect and holy one is aware of everything in the universe at the same time. And this is the great mistake that people have made through the centuries when they have ascribed omniscience to their own the founder of their own religion or their own great spiritual teachers, mistaking omniscience in that context, in that holistic context, to mean effectual knowledge of all that is in the universe, past, present and future and all the rest of it. Now this is utterly nonsensical. If any of the founders of the religions were suddenly to come to life today and be with us here, they would hardly pass an O-level. They just don't know those things. They never did know those things. The things that we know in terms of the finite and temporal is something special to our particular age. But the difficulty arises with us because our consciousness is limited to finitude and temporality. The result is that we are isolatively self-conscious with respect to all persons, and we are separatively conscious with respect to all things, objects in the world are something quite separate from us. Persons in the world are quite separate from oneself. And this tragic distinction between self and not self, which is deep-seated in our consciousness as it is at present, is the root source of all the misery and conflict and suffering in the world. It is the fundamental sin, and I don't hesitate to say that the Roman Catholic statement that man is born in sin is perfectly true, only the Catholic world doesn't know in which way it is true. It is true in this way, that we are conscious in the manner which splits up, which denies perhaps, which hurts the unity of the universe. Because all conflict, contradiction means that that unity is hurt. If consciousness reaches its culmination, then it becomes a holistic consciousness which is always aware of people and all things in terms of complete relationship. If we think of our own daily lives, with how many people are we in complete and total relationship? How many things are there with which we are in complete and total relationship? Very few, if any at all. Because we are still at what I call the subhuman stage. I do not use the word subhuman pejoratively, not at all. I only use it factually to indicate that we human beings who constitute the world population are still on the way towards our fulfillment. And that fulfillment, it seems to me, would be marked by this holistic consciousness. Those religions which have talked in terms of establishing the kingdom of God on earth have never in their expositions, in their theology and in their philosophy, brought out clearly this evolution of consciousness. So we must bear that in mind. And as one lives the religious life and evolves towards that culmination, one becomes a light to the world in which one lives. Because that consciousness, that holistic consciousness, is the most powerful unifier of the universe. It restores the unity which is the actual fact of the universe. It is a universe, not a multiverse. Now, if we must not attempt to set out deliberately to be a light unto the world. That would be a colossal egoistic error. I, the separate individual as such, the existential being, the psychophysical organism that goes by my own name, am a limited creature who will die, and die totally. There is nothing which constitutes my existentiality which persists after the death of the body. The death of the body is also the complete death of the psyche. Because this is a psychophysical organism. Then you will say, what happens to my consciousness? My present consciousness, the limited finite consciousness, will just disappear altogether. That is to say, the sense that I am I, that will completely vanish. The sense of I am I begins in each individual a little while, sometimes a year or 2 years, after the child is born. The neonate, the immediately born child, is without any sense of I am I. Nor is it possessed of a sense of I am completely related to everything. It is a blank, a real blank. Then starts this evolutionary process, first by which the body is brought to maturity, and in that process, because we are surrounded by parents, teachers, friends, and the world in general, who are unaware of the fact that one of the purposes of our existence is the fruition of the evolution of our consciousness in terms of the holistic consciousness. They are unaware of it, therefore they cannot teach us. And because they are unaware of it, they live and act in terms of conflict, of contradiction, of confusion, which produces so much sorrow, suffering, misery, wars, and all the rest of it. When you are truly conscious of something, then you naturally and spontaneously live in accordance with that consciousness. Don't mix this up with having an idea. When I talk like this, I am, of course, presenting thoughts, concepts, ideas, because there is no other means of communication I have but to present it in terms of thoughts, ideas, and so forth. All language is confined to the realm of the finite and the temporal and the mortal. All our nouns stand for particular things, or persons, as the case may be. All our verbs stand for actions which are separate and particular. That is to say, we are conscious of all our nouns and verbs and what they stand for in terms of separateness and isolativeness. As and when, by some miracle, you really love someone, absolutely, truly, that is unreservedly, unconditionally, asking nothing whatsoever or expecting nothing whatsoever in return, then you experience holistic consciousness. It's an us consciousness, not a you and I consciousness. This consciousness is a very different thing from all our thought and feeling, from speech and from action. Thought and feeling, speech and action express the state of our consciousness. Has our consciousness evolved thus far or thus far or thus far? Has it come to its fruition or not? But we must also remember that the holistic consciousness is a transcendent consciousness whose context is not the finite, temporal, and mortal, but the infinite, eternal, and immortal. Now, it is totally impossible for the brain ever to picture that or think about it. Thinking about it is a great mistake, because words, all thoughts, after all, are just audible, inaudible speech. That's all. All our thinking is inaudible speech, isn't it? Chatter. And if one examines one's own brain activity and the process that goes on, all that chatter, or rather, say, at least 90% of that chatter centers around the vertical letter which stands for oneself, I. You just watch your the brain process and see how many times you say I in 5 minutes to yourself. You can't avoid it, because unfortunately we haven't reached that stage of evolution as a whole human race, which enables our parents, teachers, friends, and others to nurture our growth and consciousness in such a manner that we grow holistically. The body grows, all right, provided you make no mistakes with your food, your drink, your sleep, your rest, and all the rest of it. You see, that is nature's task, and nature does bring most bodies to maturity. Most of them, not all. Some are born with the misfortune of some awful defect somewhere, somehow. But this aspect of consciousness is of the utmost importance. When you know something, as you say, you don't know it really until you can do it. This is what Plato taught. When a person really knows, he can do it. I would go much further and say, when you really know, you are it as well as you can do it. Now, there's a very great difference. You are it in consciousness. Ordinarily, I am conscious of this body as this particular body, separate from all other bodies. But if I functioned in terms of holistic consciousness, I would be aware of all other bodies as completely related to this body. I would be completely aware that they are only other versions of myself. I am another version of a Torquemada or a Hitler. I am another version of a Buddha or a Jesus Christ, bodily. Consider the fact, all human bodies have an extraordinary sameness. A skeleton of bones, flesh, nerves, skin, blood, sense organs, the breathing of breathing, the heartbeat, the flow of the blood, and all the rest of it. Feeding oneself, assimilation, elimination, all this is universal for all human beings, without exception. So, you see, there you see an example of the holistic principle actually functioning in terms of the body. But as I said, whilst nature brings the body to fruition, it is our individual task to bring the psyche to fruition. And what do we mean by the psyche which has come to fruition? There are, of course, two aspects, the intellectual and the emotional. And the various qualities which we display in life are qualities which are built into us through an immensely long evolution, somewhere like 45 million years since the first Catarrhini and Platyrrhini came into being, and from them evolved the primates, and out of one particular group of primates, human beings began to evolve. It started 45 million years ago. In our brain, all that is embodied. The brain stem is surrounded by what physiologists and anatomists call the R complex, the reptilian complex, which we derive from our reptilian ancestors starting 400 million years ago. The brain is a very old thing. And about 65 million years later came the mammals. Now the reptiles have transmitted to us fear, aggression, territoriality, hierarchy. Those elements the reptiles began for us, which have come down to us. The mammals introduced the more gentle feelings, care for the young, and the family sense and the family instinct as such. The reptiles were egg-laying. The mammals gave birth to live young, which made a tremendous difference to the faculties which the physical body has. Now, we inherit all that, and it is all in our brain. And the brain, as such, the whole of the brain, is the vehicle, the instrument through which all the psychical energies that have been generated in the world from the time human beings came into being function. There is fear, aggression, tremendous egoistic separate sense and all the rest of it. That that functions because of the fact that there is this instrument in the brain here, surrounding the brain stem as such. So our task consists in understanding this. First, of course, we have to know this as a fact, and then we have to understand it. Understanding means, for me, knowing which is sustained by loving. The love which neither accepts blindly, which is not something, the acceptance is not because of gullibility, nor is there rejection out of hand, but a patient, forbearing, gentle consideration which goes on continuously. So that when that lovingness is properly associated with the knowingness, then one really understands. Take the case of what we call the instinctive understanding the mother has for its young. How does it know? It just knows, as we say. See? But that understanding is only at an early stage. When understanding, when consciousness has reached its fruition as holistic consciousness, then that understanding becomes universal, becomes total. You know how it is said of all the great spiritual teachers, that if anyone approached them, the teacher knew that person completely. With the holistic consciousness, that sensitivity, which is an intellectual, emotional sensitivity, was able to be so at one with the person that he or she knew that person. There was no need for that person to say anything. So the mother understands that way. Now we too, in our way, understand. We know from our own experience how, even in our young days, we sometimes meet a friend, we have a friend whom we really understand. We know naturally, oh yes, the relationship is there and it is vital. It may be with a boy, it may be with a girl, it may be whoever it is, you see. And later on in life, as and when love in its reality begins to sprout, then that understanding is complete and total. And it is that understanding which is essential for harmony between human beings all throughout the world. With that sort of understanding, the problems which crop up in the world cease to be problems for us, if we have that understanding. Because through that understanding, we see all sides of the question. And we see that every side of a question has a certain degree of validity. Because of this, that and the other force at play, this was the resultant. It couldn't be avoided, you see. But one has to have that loving acceptance, that loving knowing, which enables us to respond rightly to that particular situation, to that particular person. This is, of course, a very difficult task. Very difficult, extremely difficult. But this is what we are, I feel, this is what we are growing towards. And ultimately, if the human race does not commit suicide before then, and there are indications that it well might, out of evil willfulness, or out of sheer stupidity, or out of, because of some accident, you see. If the human race doesn't do that, this is what it can realize ultimately. And I believe this is one of the important purposes of our separate individual existence, to release that complete unity. Another purpose is to bring mind to fruition. When the psyche is utterly purified, what happens? It is empty, totally empty of all beliefs, conceptions, ideas, convictions, and the result of our experience, and so forth. Ideas, experience, and so on, are not wrong in themselves. But the wrong comes in when we cling to them. We cling to them and insist that this is right and proper. Mr. Scargill insists this is right and proper. Mr. McGregor insists that that is right and proper. And the two are in conflict. And the whole of the world is in that rather silly and unhappy state. It seeks happiness in the wrong way again. It chases sensational delight. Chasing sensational delight is the surest guarantee of misery, sooner or later in life. A decent austerity offers probably the most suitable situation. Deprivation is bad, affluence is evil. Every single civilization experienced its downfall after realizing affluence. To have a sufficiency, yes. And to have a sufficiency which can be useful for the rainy day, so to say. All right. But who stops short at that sort of sensible sufficiency? Practically nobody. And we don't, we make all these mistakes because our consciousness is what it is at present. So if we understand something of the purposes of our existence and realize that the purification of the psyche is the most important aspect of our life, then we can bring about some sort of harmony within ourselves. What is the marriage, the first meaning of the marriage made in heaven? Every single human being, male or female, has masculine and feminine elements in the psyche. When those two energies are in harmony with each other, then that is the first expression of the marriage made in heaven. When consciousness undergoes that transformation which comes through the purification of the psyche, mind you, psyche, not mind. Mind is absolutely pure, it is universal, it is characterless as such. It is just an energy, like electricity is an energy, like gravitation is a force, and so forth, you see. Then mind begins to function properly when the psyche is pure. So now, we must bear these things in mind as constituting the religious life. Rituals, doctrines, fixed doctrines. Doctrines are all right. Even doctrines like Immaculate Conception, Virgin Birth, and all the rest of it. They have a meaning, but they have a psychological meaning, denoting the development of your own consciousness and your own progress as far as reaching true humanity is concerned. Dogmas and so forth, they have nothing to do with religiousness. What is the meaning of religion? Religare. To restore back, to bind back or restore back to the source from which we come. You may call that source God. I like to use the word transcendence because words like God and Brahman and Allah and so forth are so heavily loaded and spoilt. Look at all the God conceptions that exist in the world. What are they but projections out of human brains of themselves in apotheosis? That is all. I love my friends or my wife or my family. God is all love. I am kind to so and so and so and so. God is all kindness. But we never say, I am harmful and hurtful to so and so, and God is all harmfulness and hurtfulness. Which God actually is. Don't forget, the totality includes what we call good and evil. But there is that condition of transcendence, of perfection, in which our limited good and evil has no meaning. This is a terrible thing to say, isn't it? But there we are. Of all the religions, it is only in the Bhagavad Gita that you get a hint of this. In no other religion is this brought out. When Arjuna asks Krishna to reveal his form, that form is revealed as the essence of all good things, and it is also revealed as the bringer of death and destruction everywhere. Death is essential. Absolutely essential. Life is eternal. It consists of birth and death. Life manifests as complete and total change all along the line. But what does change mean? You die to this condition when you change into the new condition. That is death. There comes the point when the particular psychophysical organism dies and dies totally. But that which constituted was the source of all the elements composing the psychophysical organism just remains itself. All the atoms of all the chemical elements composing the body go back to the general storehouse. Similarly, all those transcendent energies, when I say transcendent energies, I don't mean merely things like electricity or anything, but something belonging to another realm altogether. All those transcendent energies just are the same transcendent energy. It is as if, supposing we regard, we talk in terms of God as the creator of the totality. It is as if God wears innumerable suits. We all wear clothes. We cast them off when they are outworn. We cast them aside. God casts aside every single manifestation of himself, which is his suit. There is no reason to fear death. Welcome death. Because if you really understand death, and you can love death, you will be free of all fear of death. The fear of death is the fundamental fear from which all other fears stem. It is in us, in most of us, subconsciously, even unconsciously, it is there. Look at the way people who have well past their useful life cling to their life. The tragedy of geriatrics. They are just vegetables. I'm sorry, I'm not insulting the vegetables. The vegetables are very good in themselves. But they are just useless, and they continue to exist quite uselessly. So many of them want to die, but are not allowed to die. Which is a very sad thing, really. Some, of course, are senseless enough to do the opposite thing, commit suicide, which is only an expression both of self-hate and hate of one's environment. So one commits suicide. So we have to bear all these things in mind in living the religious life. Death is the portal to deeper life and also to immortality. There is no such thing as immortality for the separate particular person or thing. No such thing at all. Immortality is something you yourself will experience in consciousness when the psyche is so purified that you are able to be conscious in terms of totality. And when you are conscious that way, you will experience actually here and now, whilst bodily alive, the meaning of immortality. I have said time and again, immortality rides on the wings of time. And that is a fact. You see, we have such peculiar ideas about immortality and eternity. We think of them as endless time, perpetuity. There is no such thing as perpetuity. In eternity, past, present, and future have no meaning. But past, present, and future, which are the ephemeral manifestations of eternity, are a reality for us as we are. But when we transcend this reality, this which is a reality now, and achieve the ultimate understanding of it, we will see that immortality is here and now continuously, which includes eternity is perpetually here. It includes birth and death in simultaneity. Hence, the perpetual change throughout the universe. I say these things with the hope that it may help you to be free of fear. Be free of fear, and it will help you to be free of sorrow. Don't go to others for assistance. You are your own teacher. Or if you are not, you should be your own teacher. Observe carefully. And when you are observing, be wide awake to the fact that you are observing with a conditioned brain. And if you just bear that in mind whilst you are observing, the conditioning of the brain will be revealed unto yourself. And when it is truly revealed in its true nature, you will be free of it altogether, of that conditioning. And that completely alters your life. Then you can't help but live the good life in the true sense. And that is the religious life. That is the human life. The word human means happy creator. That's what the word human really means. Its root is the Sanskrit root man. And the hu, the prefix, simply means that which has flowered happily, come to fruition. And man is the root from which our word mind and man are both derived. Man is the happy creator, because mind is the creative power which brings all manifestation into being. This archetypal form of the primordial creative energy, which of course I postulate, because one can't talk about these things without having some sort of basic postulate. I just postulate one primordial, undifferentiated creative energy, which by self-constriction becomes everything. All manifestation is due to the self-constriction of this utterly transcendent, infinite, eternal, immortal, creative energy. And I use those terms because in our modern scientific age, it is wise to use the terms which belong to a scientific age. In previous ages, thousands of years ago, men were very, all the forms of expression were very anthropomorphic. You see, as I said earlier, the God concept, for instance. He is a chap up there, you know, who is a very fine chap. You see the absurdity of the whole thing. What I am saying will be an absurdity in due time. That is to say, the saying will be not that which underlies the saying. The eternal reality is the eternal reality. But the expressions of it are the things which, like the clothes which get outworn, cast them aside. So you be your own teacher and your own pupil, and you will find happiness. The real merriment, which is the meaning of merrily on high. This is the Christmas season. Christ's Mass. The emergence of the Christ consciousness. Very likely Jesus Christ was not born on the 25th of December. No one knows his actual date. In fact, he was not born at 1 BC. The year 1, which started the whole Christian era. You see, they say he was born 4 BC. Well, it just doesn't matter a scrap. All that sort of thing is so unimportant. But what the Christ consciousness or the Buddha nature stands for, this transcendent, infinite, eternal reality, that is the important thing. And it stands, and Christmas Day, like all the holy days of the other religions, are days which intended for people to devote themselves to understand this sort of thing and grow into true, fulfilled human beings. So I wish you a Merry Christmas in that sense of the term Merry. Thank you all.